This episode of the Topcast is proudly supported by Rock Out Loud.
Jumping on, a trend just because it's a trend, I bring TikTok as sort of the example. Like, if you're going to make, dance videos and or reaction videos, right? Like, people just reacting to stuff and not being true to the audience you're trying to reach, right? And that's the biggest mistake for me.
Hi, teachers, and welcome back to another episode of the Topcast. It's so great to be able to hang out with you again. Thank you for all the feedback we've been receiving. We had a bit of a competition recently over on social media, and as part of getting the win in there, we were asking people to leave some feedback for us, and it's been wonderful to read all the comments coming back through about how meaningful this podcast has been to you over all the years we've been running it. It's been 5 years or more now. And I still enjoy every episode and every interview that we put together for you. So thanks for trusting me with your time. I always aim to deliver lots of value for you, and I hope that's the case today. Today's episode is going to be super useful to you if you've ever wondered about how powerful YouTube could be to either help market your studio or a product or service that you might be offering online as part of our Evolution membership. And so I thought that the best person to ask would actually be my own YouTube channel manager. His name is Carlos Pacheco, and he's a consultant and YouTube audience strategist who's been working and advising creators, producers, content owners, and distributors all about channel growth, content optimization, piracy protection, and monetization strategies since 2012. And you'll hear at the start of this episode just how much of an impact he's had on my own YouTube channel, which has been growing hugely since he took over and helped me strategize the content we were creating and also optimize things like our tags and just the strategy around what we release and when and how we do it and how often. So if you've ever wondered those kinds of questions, how often do I need to post? What can I do? What can't I do? What does YouTube like? What doesn't it like? What if I get a copyright strike? All those kinds of questions. Well, that's exactly what we're going to be answering in today's episode. As usual, we'll publish all our show notes and a full transcript over at topmusic.co/episode241. So let's get started. Welcome to the show, Carlos Pacheco. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you're actually my YouTube channel manager, and you've been looking after it for me for a few years now. We're going to get into some of the details about how that all works and the kind of impact you've had. But just before that, can you tell everyone just a little bit about yourself and whether you're – are you a musician? I can't even remember.
No, I'm not.
We'll keep talking, but that's okay.
But I have family that are musicians. I have a very close cousin who's like a very accomplished guitarist and producer. But a little bit about myself. Most of my career has been around marketing. Worked for many big agencies in Canada, digital marketing. But about 10 years ago, I switched to a media company in Montreal called Just for Laughs. Hired me and told me there's a bunch of guys putting content on YouTube, but they have no idea what they're doing. Can you take a look? And I took charge of it and brought some sort of like basic SEO marketing thinking to it, and turned it into a monster. It was it was already doing well. It was already had 100 or a few hundred thousand subscribers, which was really good in 2012 or something like that, and brought it to 4 million within a year.
Amazing.
And, it turned into a monster for the company. And after that, I went for other companies that sort of wanted me to do the same thing for them.
Great.
And I've been focused on YouTube for the past 8 years now.
And how many people are you working with? How many channels?
Oh, it varies. It could be, a couple to half a dozen, depending on the, time of year, season. I've only been doing, so a little bit of a caveat. You were sort of my first client as a freelancer, right?
Okay.
I was working, I had a job, and I kept getting people knocking at my door and asking me for help. And I kept saying, I can't really do it, I have a job. And then you came knocking and I said, let me give this a crack. And I've been doing this full time for a year now, just before the unfortunate event started happening, And but thankfully, it's been really great. So yeah, I would say, like, you know, it can be between half a dozen to you know, a little bit more channels at a time.
There you go. I didn't know I was the trial case for you to go into more freelancing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, that was 3 years ago, I think, about October 2018. So can you give us and the listeners a bit of an understanding of how you've helped us grow in that time?
Yeah, I mean, what I ended up doing initially is taking a look at what the channel was doing before, which you were uploading podcasts and live streams. And also, your live streams were Facebook native. So I came in and started telling you that, you know, mate, you need to start, you know, I started cracking the whip and say, you need to make stuff a little bit more dedicated to the platform instead of just, you know, repurposing content. Your channel, I believe, started something like 2008 or something. You were an early player, which was amazing. you had a lot of backlog content, but you know, by the time when I took over it, it had you know, about 900 subscribers. You were just under 1,000, and you know, I would say a total of 160. Sorry, the stats are a bit sort of muddy, but again, you're in sort of that amount. And first year I started working with you, we brought that over to, we increased it to 2,700 subscribers just in that year on top of what you already had. And year three, we're at 7,500 subscribers that you've gained. You know, so essentially we're doubling every year in terms of your growth. Same thing with your views. You went from 167,000 views, you know, 2017 to 2018. And then year after that, 350,000 views, so double. And then the year after that, 1.2 million views, so triple. So things are doing really well, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Together. So from 1,000 to, I think we've got about 15,000 subscribers now. Yep. And views up to about 3 million now, which is, I mean, insane. I never thought I would get anywhere near there. I mean, that's just crazy. The other thing I was really surprised by, Carlos, and was never a plan, was the AdSense revenue. So for those of us all who sit through these wretched ads all the time, if you're not familiar, the people whose videos these ads play on get a very small amount for all the plays. And we're up to about $10,000 worth of revenue in that time. Now, that, I mean, that's not insignificant.
No.
But for something that I never really planned to have happen, I thought that was kind of cool. And in actual fact, something pretty cool happened maybe a year or so ago, and that's that the revenue that we were bringing in started to offset your costs, which was really cool.
So now you just gave away that, like, I make $10,000.
Every single month, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, yeah, that's essentially how, you know, I did my, you know, I was successful with media companies, is that I brought in this extra piece of revenue that they didn't expect. And, you know, you're making, you know, money. You know, I work with channels that make, I'll be honest, 100 times more a month, 100x times more a month, right? Obviously, the amount of content they upload is completely different. But, you know, one of the things that I also want to sort of point out is that your example is one of my best case studies. And it's not because of how big you are, which you are pretty big. It's just that how niche your audience is, right? You're trying to reach piano teachers, not, you know, somebody learning to play piano. So it's piano teachers. And I'm always a fan of channels that are reaching out to a niche audience. So I think it's pretty amazing that, you know, the channel's grown to the size it's grown.
Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, it's been a fun ride. It's been hard work though. There's been lots of times when I've gone, oh, Carlos, I don't want to make any more videos. Don't make me do this. But as we'll say, as we'll talk about later on, that frequency of publishing is super critical. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But there's a lot of teachers, particularly in our Evolution membership, who are interested in using YouTube ads as part of their marketing strategy for selling courses and even promoting their own studios. So do you think this is a good content strategy these days, or is it becoming too popular? What would you say?
Yeah, I think it's still valid, but you can't go into this platform thinking that all you're going to do is sell. You have to go into this platform as as giving some of your secrets away, right? Because you're not giving away anything that other people don't already know. And I always sort of show this example of I used to own a Subaru. And I love that car. I wanted to fix it myself. And when this air filter broke and needed to be replaced, I was like, okay, how do I do this? And I went to YouTube to figure out how to do it. And the steps were so complicated that I was like, screw that. I'm just going to go to the dealership. And it's like, who helped me figure that out? The dealership's video that showed me how to do it, right? So the dealership was giving away the solution, but you still have to do it yourself. You still have to figure that out yourself. And that's a little bit of sort of the ecosystem, the mentality that you have to bring into this space is sort of a give value back to the audience. Because if all you're going to do is sell something, then you're not going to build an audience. You're going to be a brand and nobody's going to really want to follow you.
So have you got a couple of other tips for teachers that want to go down this path that they need to remember?
Well, they need to remember being consistent. So don't think about, uploading 5 videos and then, forgetting about the channel. These days, I tell my clients that if you're starting a channel, you have to consider uploading videos for between 2 to 3 years before it starts getting momentum. Now, you had many years before we worked together, right? So there was an advantage there that there was like a lot of video content. Yes, it was different. It wasn't performing, but it still had that history, and YouTube likes, when there's a channel with a lot of content. So consistency, the best you can do is sort of like figure out a way to upload videos on a regular basis. And it doesn't have to be every week, right? Everybody talks about, you need a minimum 3 videos a week or else, or a type of thing like that. And yes, that does help. And you can grow faster with those types of frequencies, but that will burn you out. You'll get tired of doing videos. And maybe after a month, 2 months, you'll be like, I can't do this anymore. You have to find a pace that works with you. I've had clients that have been very successful just uploading 1 video every 2 weeks. So that's something to think about. Using format that works on the platform. Thinking about, and again, like formats can be educational, can be DIY, can be, just don't create content for TV. One of the things that annoys me the worst about some content is when this is not, I don't know if this podcast will be a video podcast as well, but when people do YouTube videos and they're talking to somebody off the camera and they're like this, right? And
like an interview, like a TV interview.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like a TV interview, right? And talking about how awesome they are. And it's like, why are you talking to this? It's like, well, why don't you talk to me, to my face, and tell me, what you're helping me with, or all that sort of stuff, right? So that's something to think about. And then, I always sort of think about, explore the formats that, YouTubers are using to grow as well. I'm not saying start making start dancing on screen. Right. I'm just saying, like, use the format that works for them and that works or has an audience. So example, like, do you know what a ASMR video is?
I do. Yeah. That's right? the sound one, isn't it?
Yes. I can't even say what the words are, but I will have to just look up ASMR. And then, it's basically, people whispering into their very, very, mics that are maxed out. Right. And there's
an audience. Really annoying.
I bet. But there are ways. The thing is, nowadays, funny enough, nowadays there's you think about that format. Like 5 years ago, nobody knew what that was, right? Now everybody, more or less everybody in the ecosystem knows what ASMR is. Brands are using it in their commercials, right? Like, so it's become mainstream. So it's a format that was born on a platform. And there are ways to sort of appropriate that pro format to reach a bigger audience. And I, you know, right now off the top of my head, I can't think of one that will work for you, but yeah, like how can you, like, again, like how, you know, it's really, you know, try to be creative and adopt the platform, sort of like the what the platform is popular on the platform. So for example, a better example would be music, you know, if music that, you know, your students are looking for, are really interested in right now, right? Obviously, YouTube is one of the biggest music platforms out there, is the biggest music platform out there, actually. That's where TikTok's coming after that crown. But so, you know, your audience is the kids that you're trying to teach. They're trying to learn those songs, and then they're going to ask their teachers how to learn those songs. Those teachers are going to have to learn those songs. So how you have to teach them how to do it. And there are songs that you probably never heard of, and you just need to, and, you know, showing them how to do those songs would be a good way to, you know, to sort of like test the waters in the space.
Mm. And do you need to go viral like crazy to have success, or is actually that not something to aim for?
I personally think, like, obviously virality is going to help boost your channel very, you know, grow it very quickly, but you're probably not going to get the audience you're really looking for there. You know, what will happen is you'll be exposed to a lot of, you know, demographics that are completely outside of your ecosystem. Then, yeah, they're going to come for that video and they're going to maybe subscribe. But then you're going to upload a video that's completely different, or, you know, a video that doesn't, it's like, oh, I was here because you made a Fortnite video, your Fortnite music video. And why are you now teaching me about, you know, telling me about this Casio piano that you use, right? Like, it's not where I came here for, right? So that's why for me, I'm actually, you know, I'm hardcore against trying to go viral on this platform, because it doesn't pay off. It gives you a false sense of success. And often what happens is a downturn in your views, and your audience quality actually diminishes, because YouTube starts seeing you saying, hell, his new videos aren't working as well. So, and people are unsubscribing and watch time is down and all that sort of stuff, right? So that then it sort of has to reset the channel. It takes some time to reset the channel, right? So again, I'm not saying it's all bad, but it's something to consider, that it's not going to be the audience you're really looking for.
Mm. Good tips there. I want to talk about the algorithm, because everyone talks about this on Facebook and all these social media apps. We had a video, an unexpected successful video that went kind of viral as I could be in my little niche. And that was me demonstrating the roll-up piano. And so for people who aren't familiar with how YouTube works, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, Carlos, you're the expert, but the video went out. It was probably out there for 2 or 3 months, I think, at least, not doing all that much, just ticking along regular number of views. And then suddenly it just shot up. And so what happened is, and it's kind of a snowball effect, someone watched it and really liked it and interacted with it. And then that made YouTube go, oh, well, I might show this to some more people. And then they interacted, and then it shows it to some more people. And then this snowball builds. And suddenly we're going to near 1 million views on that one video pretty soon. Is that right? Is that how it works?
I mean, it's how it worked for that video specifically, right? So, you know, at the end of the day, like, that video was a little bit something of a combination of our discussions and seeing what was really working in this space. And one of the things you got to think about is, like, we had, you know, before we were talking, you know, and I started looking at the videos you had done before and what worked, and I was realizing that, you know, you're not really talking, you know, I think it was like a random video where you were talking about apps or other tools that teachers use. And I recommended that you start, you know, doing product videos. And we've now seen that works really well, right? For your audience, for your niche.
Mm.
And I think for me, it's not just a question of, of one thing. It's many things. It's you've adopted a format that's very native to the platform. right?
Yeah, that was my first unboxing. I'd never done that kind of thing before. I thought, I've never watched one. I think it's ridiculous, but I did one because you suggested it, and bang, people do engage with it. They like that.
Yeah, exactly. Because everybody's shopping, right? You want to buy certain products. You're curious about certain products, and you're doing some research about it. So obviously, in your world, people are looking for that. So, and obviously, the thing, what happened with you is you had a little bit of a ridiculous product, right? And like, it's not. So obviously, it caught somebody's attention, and it was like, this is hilarious. I've never seen this before. And obviously, it created a little bit more of a sharing opportunity, right? Where somebody's like, look at this, is like, can you believe this piano? And they're going to share it, right? And that's when the algorithm starts kicking in and start paying attention. Say, oh, wait a minute, this video is being shared way more than your other videos. Whereas you think of like your previous videos, yes, there's going to be sharing, but let's be honest here. It's not going to be a lot of sharing, right?
Right.
You're mostly the person. You and your ecosystem shares it within itself, right?
Mm.
So that's what really sort of like helped kick off that channel is basically that video is, you know, giving it more. It gave it more juice for YouTube to say, hey, wait a minute, this is being shared more, and then it started snowballing from there. And to this day, it's still a video that drives a lot of views for your channel.
Mm. Interestingly, though, coming back to what you were saying about whether a viral video builds the kind of audience you want, we have, I know, in our conversations, questioned whether we have just got a whole lot of piano enthusiasts now in my channel who may not now be teachers and may not want what I continue to make. So there is that same thing's happened to me in that regard.
Yeah.
But it's fun and it's kind of nice. I remember when you told me you kept screenshotting the stats and going, oh my goodness, this is not stopping. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
We've talked a little bit about frequency already. Just keeping it regular, I think, is your main bit of advice on that. Doesn't have to be 3 a week, doesn't even have to be 1 a week, but whatever it is, make it consistent and make it regular and make it bespoke and original for YouTube. Don't do what I did and repurpose a podcast with no video on it and all that kind of stuff. It's just not going to work.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to say, like, at the end of the day, like, you know, you just have to be, you know, passionate about what you're talking about, right? It's, you know, that will come off in your videos and your frequency, people will come back to it. Some of the biggest YouTubers out there that are in their, you know, very strong in their niche, don't upload every 2 weeks. They upload once a month or sometimes, you know, take way longer. And because they take a lot of time to make their videos. So again, I had a client that, you know, uploaded every 2 weeks, and we did it with him for upwards of 2.5 years until his video hit a stride. And when we think about it, 2.5 years of content every 2 weeks, that's about 20 videos, 20, 25 videos a week for 2 to 3 years. You're looking at 50, 75 videos. That seems to be around the sweet spot when YouTube starts to, this channel's starting to get serious, where there's a lot of quality content and there's a lot of content to back it up. And your views just, you know, when somebody watches one video and then starts looking at another video and another video, and then YouTube starts liking you more.
That's good, because I know a lot of people would be put off by having to feel that they've got to do 1,000 videos and all this kind of stuff. So I think that's really useful to say, no, you don't have to. I think the other thing that's important to say too, Carlos, although I don't know whether you'll agree, it doesn't have to be perfect to get stuff out there. And a lot of the tutorials people watch and become popular, they're pretty crummy, really. So do you need high tech, HD cameras, lighting, all that kind of stuff to be successful?
You need to be posting. That's my philosophy when it comes to that, right? Like, there's a lot of things that are going to be in your way to get videos on a schedule and schedule the uploading, creating a schedule of upload. And it goes back to consistency. I say, yes, videos are getting better. Production's getting better every day. But every single YouTuber out there started with a phone or a handheld, point and shoot, and upgraded as they went. If you spend too much money up front, you will, you know, be disappointed, and you won't be learning what works. you know, one of, I'm not a YouTuber myself, and my wife is more of a YouTuber. She's made it, she has a channel on marketing, but for about a year, she was testing the waters and just figuring it out. And we recorded ourselves putting the cheapest wallpaper we could find on in our condo when we used to live in the city. And that video's turned into 150,000 views. And it's like the most, like, such bad quality video, no sound, no mics, just us recording ourselves but giving valuable content because people are really interested in how to put this wallpaper up. So to me, that's the purest sort of example. I've done myself other videos where I've recorded, I'm a horrible YouTuber. I have zero production skills, but I've done two or three videos that have hit, you know, 10, 15,000 views because I'm providing valuable content, valuable information. And they're not about YouTube. It's like I did a Casper video, Casper mattress video, and I did a video about buying my new bike, you know, type of situation. And because they're, you know, product specific videos, again, that works.
I did one on a handwritten notation software on app once. Yep. It's still up on my channel. And that was really popular too. That was one of my biggest videos for a long time. And that was just, I just put a camera over my shoulder while I use this app. Again, no production values, no special mic. It was really rubbish, but it was valuable. People enjoyed it. So I think that's, you're absolutely right. Just post. Don't worry about all the making everything perfect. Another question we get, and I've thought about a lot, is sending people off YouTube to capture their emails and buy products and things. So what are your thoughts on that? Is that okay to do? Does YouTube not like that?
Well, it's definitely okay to do if you have a business and you're generating money off your website, right? Like, again, like, people get too focused on YouTube as like the end all be all in terms of your business. And it's not. You can build a business. You can build, you know, if your website's making money, then you have to, your strategy needs to be about, you know, driving people to your website. However, if your strategy, you know, for a specific period of time is brand awareness and growth on social platforms, then you need to think differently. And you need to think about, you know, what's going to get people to follow me more, come back to my channel, you know, get more views, and maybe not think about, you know, conversions on my website for a little bit of time. That's when I would think about, you know, removing or making that less of an important thing. And yes, YouTube likes that more. I'll be frank with you. Like, they just do not want, none of these social platforms like to be linked out. They've done a lot of optimizing to keep you on a platform, recommending more videos and all that sort of stuff to keep you going. So if all you're doing is driving them off, YouTube's not going to recommend you as much as others. So, but it all really depends on your marketing strategy. One thing I would think about is if you're trying to build a YouTube channel, don't go into the space and start just driving people off of it, because that's not what people are here for. They're here to be, you know, entertained, watch content. And, you know, when you're starting, you need to build an audience. So I would avoid that when you're starting.
Good advice. I've got two examples here. One of my friend, Scott from Scott's Bass Lessons, his only marketing source channel, I guess, he doesn't blog, he doesn't podcast, he used to, but doesn't anymore, is YouTube. That is his one. He's got a huge bass players channel, and he generally just gives content. I don't think he really sends people off too much. But in emails and things like that, that's where he does more of his conversions. Then you've got someone like Rick Beato, who you probably know, who's like a million subscribers or two, maybe two. Like, it's insane. And I watch his videos, most of them, again, content, you know, why is this song cool? Here's where this comes from, all this great music stuff. But then he'll do, you know, and he'll put in the title, sale, go to my website links. Here, I'm doing a sale on this. So again, just mixing things up, I think, is probably the right approach.
He also has a bigger audience now, right? He's built that audience. So he knows that he doesn't have to do it every single video and, you know, gives value, and then a sale, right?
The virtual lessons with Zoom driving you mad, audio issues, trouble connecting. RockOutLoud.live is a virtual music lesson video platform made for music teachers who want to provide their students with the ultimate virtual music lesson experience. Inside the RockOutLoud.live video application, you'll have access to resources like sheet music searches of a library of songs, along with chords you can share across screens to your students in real time. Plus, your student can download their virtual lesson notes while inside the virtual session. It's cheaper than Zoom and gives you lots of the tools to teach an interactive lesson. I've personally been testing RockOutLoud.live with my students and also asking other teachers I know to try it out, and the feedback has been phenomenal. The ease at which you can connect with your students, the sound quality, and also the ability to share on-screen chord charts, chord symbols, and lead sheets is just phenomenal. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for a free 7-day trial by visiting RockOutLoud.live now.
Have you got any examples of your own of channels you think are doing a really good job that we could either put a list, we might be able to put a list in the show notes, or you might be able to mention a couple now?
Oh, man. In terms of channels, that's a question that I'm actually stumped on, because I'm, you know, at this point where I love channels that, you know, just give wholehearted advice, right? And so just to give you right now, like I'm really into like power tools for some reason, because I recently
because you're renovating.
Yes, and they're renovating. So I'm doing a lot of research on power tools, and I'm seeing so many videos about it. And I love videos that are completely honest and say, like, you know, brutally honest about the tool and what happens. And then, you know, they're trying to make money off the AdSense, and they say it, and then just really honest in terms of that, right? And I think people really appreciate that honesty and say, hey, I'm trying to make a living. And then some of them will say, like, they're, you know, the ones that I've sort of drawn to are the ones that are like saying, I'm reviewing these tools and none of them paid for me. I paid for all these things. And, but, you know, help me by clicking, if you're interested in any of these tools, click the links below to buy. And then there's affiliate links and all that sort of stuff. And that to me is the purest way to use the platform to really, like, you know, respect your audience, respect the intelligence of your audience, and don't play any mind games with them. And, you know, especially your audience, you know, they're not kids. So, you know, you talk to them and say, hey, you know, this is how I support my channel. You're getting free content, free lessons, all that sort of stuff. So that's, to me, that's one of the things. And I don't have a specific channel name for you to give you, because I'm honestly, like, I'm a little bit more channel agnostic these days than I used to be. I used to be really into, like, this YouTuber and that YouTuber. But now I'm sort of like, you know, I search and I love anything that helps me understand, like, you know, how to build something and how to do something. So that's, education is huge for me. That's why I love this platform.
I did the same when I was looking to buy a new camera. So I've got a DSLR, the one that I'm using now, a Sony A6100, I think it is. And I watched so many YouTube videos of all the different options that I had. And I started narrowing them down, and then I talked to friends, all this kind of stuff. But again, just that education for YouTube videos was fantastic. And then, of course, the recommended ones were like, oh, I haven't checked out that camera. And then an hour or two has gone, or maybe even 3 or 4 hours. I want to get on to some member and follower questions, because we ask for questions on our channels. So I'm going to get to those in one moment. But just a quick one, any other mistakes that you see people making when they start a channel, or they're really looking to start growing a channel?
Jumping on, you know, a trend just because it's a trend. You know, making, you know, again, like I bring TikTok as sort of the example, like, you know, if you're going to make, you know, dance videos and or reaction videos, right? Like, you know, people just reacting to stuff and not being true to the audience you're trying to reach, right? And that's the biggest mistake for me, because again, it sort of brings back the whole, you know, you're attracting the type of audience that's not really interested in you and what your product is and what you're trying to offer. To me, that's one of the biggest things. And everybody, you know, again, like, just trying to go viral all the time. Yeah, again, it doesn't bring any real value other than, you know, the metrics that the channel gives you. And if you're, you know, a teacher and you love your craft and you love teaching and you want, all you care about is, you know, well, one of the most important things is students and everything around it, then you have to think of like what attracts that audience to your content, right? So that's my take on that.
All right, let's do some quick fire-ish kind of questions now from various users. We had lots of questions about tags and increasing subscribers. We've talked about some of that already, but we'll probably have a couple more comments to say as well. But firstly, how do you direct people to your website from YouTube? We've talked about it a bit. But
yeah, there are a bunch of ways. YouTube doesn't have all the features on when you launch a YouTube channel. That comes later on when you join the partner program. But one of the quick tips that you can use is obviously putting into the description, a link in the description always helps. And obviously mentioning it on the video, right? Like, you know, the thing is, think of like, you know, if you ever used a phone, right? That's where everybody's watching videos these days, right? Majority are watching on phones or tablet devices. And the comment, the description is often hidden. So you need to do a straight up call to action, say, hey, there's a link in the description. If you need more information, visit my website. Same with comments. Comments are mostly hidden, but the first, you can pin one comment to your video, and that can be your own comment. You see many YouTubers do this where, you know, they'll direct you to a website that they mention or another video or anything else that or a subscription service, you know, like they use the pinned comment. That's another way. When you join the partner program and later on you get you're able to link your website to your channel, and that's when you can also put it into your overlays, which are these little info cards that appear in the top right hand side of the videos that you can, you know, just, and you can also do that within the video and say, hey, look at this, you know, the link on the top right is my website, check it out. And as well as something called an end card that appears in the last 20 seconds of your video. Again, you have the choice of having people watch more videos or visit your website.
Yeah, you really helped me with all those end cards and pop-ups and things and saying, all right, Tim, we need a new end card for this month and I need you to point over here and say this and point there and say that, and I'm going to put a thing on the overlay where they can click to things. So that was quite eye-opening for me to learn how to do all that kind of stuff. Again, if you're just starting, don't worry about this. You won't have access to it for a little while anyway. But down the track, you can start doing those things. What about monetizing? Can you monetize straight away or do you have to build up a bit?
You have to build up a bit. It used to be a straight up process. But obviously, as with everything, Google giveth and taketh away. So now you need to have a channel with 1,000 subscribers and generate 4,000 watch time hours a year, every 365 days. So if you drop that, you will lose monetization. And that's when your videos will start having ads in front of it and you'll be able to use other features like, you know, Super Chat as when you do live streams and a couple of other features. There's, you know, YouTube has a bunch these days, but ads is the main one where people start monetizing. But caveat with that one is that it will take a heck lot of videos and content for you to make any significant money from ads. And you know, you're making a little bit of money, but it's not livable money. Nice. When you said $10,000 before, that's $10,000 over 3 years.
Right.
So my advice with people with businesses is think of how you make money off the platform and
from the business first, right?
And, you know, yes, that YouTube money can become interesting, but it's never going to be, especially in this niche, I don't think it will ever be a significant money driver unless all you do is YouTube, right? You just essentially have to decide, okay, my career is going to be about making YouTube videos and drop becoming a teacher or doing other things.
Jeff asked a question about, he's got a whole lot of videos already. Do I just dump them in my channel? I think we've answered that already. No, the answer would be spread them out over time. YouTube likes consistent posting. So even if you have 100 videos ready, don't post them all. Spread them out over time.
Yeah. If you have a bank of videos like that, my advice would be like launch the channel with like 5 to 10 videos. So that when you start uploading regularly, so that somebody finds your video, they're not, you know, here's the example. You upload a video to your channel. people start finding it. They're like, oh, I like this channel. I like this video. Let me see what else they did. Nothing. And you're like, oh,
yeah,
I'm not going to subscribe to this. Right.
Yeah.
But if they start, if they look into your channel and you're like, you have, you know, 5-10 videos that are like really good, they're going to watch more and they're going to subscribe. So, you know, start with like, you know, half a dozen, 5, 2, 3, again, more than one is my advice. And then, you know, starts, you know, uploading those videos. If you have 400 videos, you're set for, three to four years yeah, every week with a video. So I think you're pretty good there, right?
All right, let's talk about copyright. This is something that lots of people have questions on. How do you handle copyright disputes and claims and using copyrighted music, etc.?
So copyright is a very, very painful issue on YouTube. My advice nowadays is just to try to avoid using anybody else's music. And if you are playing the music, try to, you know, just play sections of it and not play the whole song, and then you'll avoid getting those claims. At the end of the day, there's not much fighting. The companies, the record labels are making a lot of money off claiming YouTube videos, and they play very aggressive on the platform. And you know, you're one person, they have a lot more people to manage that stuff. You can dispute because you are essentially, you know, it is essentially fair use. But at the end of the day, what it often handles, 9 times out of 10 is that dispute email goes into somebody's abandoned inbox and nobody follows up on it.
Mm.
And you're left waiting and waiting and waiting. The other option is there are companies popping up out there that help you clear rights. And the costs are actually very affordable. And there's a company called Lickd, L-I-C-K-D, that does this. And essentially they'll, you know, clear the rights for you, for your channel. And you will make, if you're monetized, if your channel is monetized and you want to play a full track of somebody's song, and you know that you're going to make money from it, then you'll be able to collect the money from those views. And there are more and more of these companies out there that help clear the rights.
Great tip. I didn't know about that one. That's pretty cool. I'm going to check it out. Rick Beato, just going back to him, B-E-A-T-O, check him out. He has so many rants on the copyright claims that he's had against him and how stupid they are and stuff. They're hilarious to watch.
Little secret is that I've done that work. I've managed copyright on YouTube for many companies, and it's fun because when you're in the other side of it, you're looking at the amount of views that's coming your way and the amount of claims and the amount of money. And you're like, I'm like dispute, just claim, like, yep, you have nothing to go after me for. And it's like, I don't need to fight some kid playing, Grand Theft Auto and listening to a song and thinks that he owns the track, right? That's what often happens 99% of the time, right?
Mm. I will mention, if you are performing or your students are performing or you're playing anything in the public domain, Bach, Beethoven, Chopin, anything that's old, and you get a copyright claim, dispute it every time. I have not lost on any of those. They just pick it up because
there's a lot of people that label. Yes, there's a lot of people that don't bother, right? So yeah.
No, dispute it every time. If it's in the public domain, it is fair use that you can use it. And I've never lost one of those. And it's just a few clicks of the mouse, really, so not a difficult thing to do. Okay, let's do metrics, analytics. What would you say are the top things to watch? Because you can get a lot of data out of YouTube.
I would say pay attention to when people are dropping off of your video.
Yes, I'd never thought about this before. You pulled me up on this really early on. And we saw that I was gabbling on at the start for a minute, just waffling. And then I had a logo and you're like, okay, look at this graph, Tim. The watch numbers just go in that period of time. And then it builds up again. So just cut all that out.
Yeah. So essentially retention, which is the you know, seeing when people are dropping out from your video. And I still to this day, you know, start working with clients that have like this long intro logo for 5 to 10 seconds, and then they ramble on and then nothing happens, and then it's like, oh, they'll leave a little nugget at the end. And you see that in the retention graph, where, you know, people, you start at 100% and it drops to 30% of your audience left within 5 to 10 seconds, right? So that, to me, that graph of retention really tells you what your audience is enjoying and why it's staying. And we can see bumps throughout the video where it's like, oh, I'm talking about this, people come back to it and thinking, okay, well, maybe I should be talking about this more in other videos or addressing things that way. And watch, having that retention will increase your channel's watch time. Watch time will get, YouTube loves people staying on the platform for a long time. So that's the metric that I think is one of the most important one. But essentially, they're all important, right? YouTube wants quality, right? One of the things that they want is quality. So if, if people drop off, that's a negative metric. If people jump off the channel, go somewhere else, that's a negative metric. If they skip, skip a bunch of, sections, that's a negative metric, right? So, all these things, and if they unsubscribe, that's a negative sign, right? So all those metrics added together give a signal of quality when it's happening the opposite of what I've just said, right? Mm. Growing, watching longer, all that sort of stuff.
Right. And what about, say you've got a paid product, it's a long video or a video course. What about posting previews, like a short 5-minute thing, and then stopping it and saying, hey, now guys, if you want to get the rest, you need to go and buy it?
I would say, yeah, as long as it's 5 minutes, 6 minutes, 8 minutes, it's not like, I've got this amazing course, but you can only do this, right? The way I would do it is give a good, a part of it away, right?
Content, something valuable.
Yeah, something valuable, right? And maybe, not necessarily the worst one, but not necessarily the best one. Like, you give like one or two tips. Let's just say you have this 10 tips for, getting more students, and you say like, well, here are two. And if you want some more, I have some more behind the scenes. Or you can say like, here are three tips for, for gaining more students, but I have a bunch more here that, on my website that will be just as valuable after that, right? And video can be like three amazing tips, blah, 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 right? Not, like how to get more, follow my course. It's three tips to help me out, help you gain more students. Again, very generic example. But then once the person watched the video, you say at the end, it's like, hey, by the way, like, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's 20 other things that you can think about, and go to my website.
Fantastic. Some of our listeners will have heard about, you need to post a 5-minute video or a 10-minute or 20-minute, or the video quality needs to be good, or what's important? Is the amazing editing and overlays and captions? What's the most important thing for a good YouTube video?
Uploading.
Again, it comes back to consistency, doesn't it?
It's consistency. To me, that's the best. That's the best thing. Like consistency, quality. When I say quality, it's not just one thing, right? It could be the quality of the information you're giving, and more than the quality of the video. Obviously, if you make an amazing, crazy video of you jumping off of a rocket ship, with a red, you think of like the Red Bull, rocket ship. Astronaut jumping off of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. Like, that's crazy, right? So, obviously, that's huge, but like, nobody can do that on a regular basis, right? I would say the only person who's sort of being able to do that nowadays is a YouTuber called Mr. Beast, who every week, every month, or every couple of weeks, releases a video that's just insane, right? But that's not your audience. So, to me, for your audience to keep engaged, to keep building, consistency is really important to stay top of mind from a marketing perspective, right? You think of it, here's a great example that I've thought about recently. Do you watch any streaming platforms? Netflix?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Netflix, Disney Plus, you have kids, right?
Yep, we do. Yeah, yep.
So remember a couple of years ago, everybody loved how you could, stream a full season of something very quickly, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Have you noticed how Disney Plus does the opposite? Right, where they upload an episode the old school way, right? Every week, a new episode, right? Mm-hmm. Why do you think we've reverted to that? It's because consistency keeps the brand top of mind.
Right.
Right. It's a very marketing way of thinking of like, you know, every week, oh, something new to talk about and your friends talking about it and everybody was talking about it. Right. So whereas when you dump a season in one shot, like you talk about it for a couple of days and then it's done. Nobody wants to talk about it. You know, on to the next thing. Right. So that consistency matters as well for content creators.
Mm. I think Game of Thrones took that to the nth degree.
Yes.
Building out like years before their final season came out.
Hey, we're still waiting for that final book, right?
We are too. I don't think he's ever going to do it. We had a question from Darren over on our Facebook group about tags as well. What's your approach with tags?
You need to build a list of tags that are, you know, to me, I build tags on a three-level strategy. Broad, which is the ecosystem you're talking about, music, teaching, all that sort of stuff. Specific to your brand, like your name, you know, what you do, all that sort of stuff. And then specific to your video. And one word tags, that's specific to your video. So very precise keywords. It's not just one keyword. It's like, you know, why does this key do this? That's a key. That's a tag, right?
Those words together are one tag.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And you need to do some research in terms of like what other people are using, you know, one of the things that you should be doing as well is keyword research. And that's looking at what other channels are using for their tags, and especially the videos that are super popular, similar to the ones that you're doing. And that information is hidden now. It used to be, you used to be able to find that, but now you need to find the tools and they're usually plugins. And I use a tool called TubeBuddy. That is a Chrome plugin that you attach, and it'll give you the tags that each YouTube channel is using. One thing to remember is that obviously it gives you a little bit of a taste of it, and then but you need to pay for a full license, which is around $10
a month. Yeah. So that's TubeBuddy, TubeBuddy. I use it as
and
well.
and saying that, I remember that's the reason you came to me. I just realized that. I just remembered now. Because you were talking to the TubeBuddy team and they're like, somebody can help you.
Is that where I found out? I was thinking at the start of this, I wonder where I found Carlos. Yeah, there you go. Yes, it was the team at TubeBuddy. Yeah. You're quite right. Okay, I hope that helps with regard to tags. And generally, I mean, lots of people ask just how do I get more subscribers? I think we've kind of mentioned that with regard to the algorithm and things, but also just a straight call to action. All the big YouTubers, no matter how big they are, they still say at the start and the end of their video, subscribe to my channel and hit that bell icon or whatever it is, right? Yeah. Is that important?
Yeah, it's still important. Who knows the way YouTube thinks these days? There's you know, they might switch that to following because, you know, there's certain technology companies that have switched. So, for example, Apple has switched the Apple podcasts to be follow a podcast, no longer a subscriber podcast, because they want to use subscribe. Because to this day, people still think that subscribe means
you pay for something. Right.
One thing that I would mention is that this is a piece of advice that I said 8 years ago, and I think to this day is still valid. Is that please subscribe, it's totally free, right? That just adding the totally free, it means something to an older, more, you know, less tech savvy audience, right? Let's face it, you know, often piano teachers are not, you know, making TikTok videos, right? They're not super, you know, like up to the lingo in terms of, in the social media platforms. So if you say subscribe, say it's free. And that's something that you know, an older demographic doesn't always understand.
There you go. Should try that one out myself.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Carlos, I reckon we should wrap things up. We've been talking for about an hour now. It's been absolutely fascinating. And I hope people listening have been finding value in it. Why don't we finish with maybe, have you got a top five list of tips that our listeners and viewers can walk away with today?
Yes. Focus on education. That will pay off in the long run. That's my tip for every content creator. Make sure you're paying attention to trends on the platform, in your ecosystem, music, new instruments, new products, and new ways of making content. I bring always the sort of the ASMR example, or even it's not relevant to you, but like you think of like you know what mukbang is.
No.
Right. So mukbang is eating in front of the camera and just eating in front of the camera, right?
Why do people watch this stuff? I don't understand.
But again, that's not an example. But again, that's a trend, right? And there are many of them. And one day you're going to see a trend and you're like, hey, that can be adapted to my audience. And
that's the important thing, though. Just follow a trend for the hell of it. Yeah. Make sure you can adapt it to suit what you're doing.
Exactly, right? Oh, this is one of the best ones that I always sort of say is find a white space. And what I mean is a white space is something that nobody else is doing. And especially in your niche, like to me, it's like, everybody's jumping, trying to go viral and trying to do the latest trend and all that sort of stuff, but not really having anything to give, right? And you are in a space that is very niche, and you can realize that, wait a minute, this is something I care about, and this is the type of information I care about. That means there's somebody else out there for sure that also cares about this information, and I'm not finding any information about it. So maybe I should make content about it. And that's a white space that nobody's paying attention to. Mm. And niches are amazing on YouTube, right?
So that was number three. Number four?
Yeah, that was number three. Keep an eye on platform-specific formats. Again, the unboxing video. That's a format that didn't exist until YouTube.
Mm.
And then find a natural way to bring, trending topics into your content. Be it like, music that's really hot right now. Again, you can bring
that. Yeah, we did the old sea shanty. You almost got on the phone the next day, like, Tim, record a sea shanty video. I don't think it did all that well, but it was fun to do anyway. And that was hugely trending. Over on TikTok in particular. So that was, that's the idea. But again, it suited. I was teaching people how to teach it, or even teaching people how to play it. So it made sense to do that for me. It was a bit of fun. In the meantime, people got to hear me sing a sea shanty really badly.
Hey, wait a minute. It's the best video. It's the video that's got the most views. One of the most viewed videos in your channel in a couple months. Yes. So don't say it didn't perform that well.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. There you go. Jumping on a trend. Yeah. That's why I need Carlos to tell me what the stats say in the back end.
Crap that whip.
Brilliant. Absolutely. Great to hang out with you and talk about all this stuff today. I'm imagining that some people are going to go, who is this Carlos guy? I should find out more about him. You've got a company called Patchwork, I think. Just tell us quickly about that in case anyone wants to follow up with you.
Yeah, it's basically me. It's Patchwork. It's Carlos Pacheco, so PACH, work. I provide consulting, coaching, and full on channel management, just like what we do together, where I, look at the I look at channels, reformat them. I call them a channel audit, and, fix them all up, and then start coaching you on what to do going forward. And some clients, I do it for a few months, and then they're like, their internal team takes over and understands. And the other clients, they're just like yourself, sort of like, okay, well, just keep doing it. You're doing a good job.
We should mention too, one other thing I forgot to say was thumbnails. That was one thing you really fixed up for us, being consistent with thumbnails and thumbnail style, just super quickly. Important or not?
Yeah, extremely important. That's something that we didn't really focus on, but extremely important because, people are scrolling through the content and you need to create a thumbnail that catches the eye. And, if all you're doing is letting the YouTube pick your thumbnail, it's often blurry. One of the things I start telling people, that are creating videos at home nowadays is like, at least take a couple of seconds and just take a really good selfie, a reaction selfie of what's going on. What are you talking about? You know, like, again, pointing at something or being like, you know, adding some sort of like emotion to the video so that people go like, what are they freaking out about and want to check out the video, right? Mm. And just, you know, and then always, and try to mix it up, right? You know, not always do the same one and create a little bit of brand, you did create a little bit of a brand on it as well. Brand look and feel, so that people know, okay, this is a top music, video as well. But again, we still mix it up.
Yep. And after I record a video, I then just grab my phone and just take some crazy photos. And I just give Carlos about 10 of them and he picks whatever he thinks is most ridiculous to put in there. Where can people connect with you, Carlos? Is on social, obviously on social media.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a, I'm starting to be a little bit of an anti-Facebook person. So definitely LinkedIn is where I connect most with potential clients. And Twitter is where I rant.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, we'll put links to where to find you in the show notes. And we'll have some more information there for everyone, sort of summarizing what we've talked about today, because I know we've covered a lot. It's been super cool. Thank you so much, Carlos, for joining us today and giving all those tips away.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
It was a pleasure.
If you've ever wondered whether YouTube could be a powerful marketing channel for your studio or business, then hopefully today has answered some of those questions for you. And it was great to get all our member questions and questions from over on our Facebook group. If you haven't joined our free Facebook group, Top Music Teaching, go over to Facebook and make sure you sign up so that you can be a part of the option to ask questions and things like that of my podcast guests, because I only share those little bits of information about future podcast guests in our membership and our Facebook group. Now, next week on the podcast, you're not going to hear from me. How cool is that? We've got another podcast takeover episode. You're going to be hearing from our amazing community manager, Nicole Douglas, who is hosting a very special guest, which I'm actually kind of sorry that I wasn't able to interview myself, the wonderful Becky Laurent. And they're talking and digging into everything to do with students with ADHD. It's going to be such a fun episode. I can't wait to listen myself. Sit back and relax. I hope you enjoy it as well next week. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Topcast from topmusic.co, and we'll speak to you again super soon. Bye-bye. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.